This is the Empower Podcast, released March 20th, 2022. Episode 582. The Same Wavelength.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
You know, I'm almost done with The Dealers of Lightning, that book I mentioned.
Oh, yes.
And right. I have to say, emotionally, it's a wild ride. Like, I mentioned how it was a kind of a airy verbiage, like very big words being used. And that's still the case.
Right.
I've gotten used to it pretty much. But interesting things that have come up in there. They walk through the infamous Steve Jobs going through Park and quote unquote stealing ideas. And
right. You know, everyone stole ideas from Parks. It wasn't just Jobs. It was everyone.
Yeah. And then I think the most visceral reactions though were like as the author describes like the engineers dealing with the bureaucracy and like just like how they had all these great ideas and like just nothing happened. And it's just so frustrating to read. It's just like, oh man. You know, and it, because they were like halfway across, they were all the way across the country and, you know, there's big giant corporation, whatever. It's just, it's, it's really, it's a great book. I really, really have enjoyed it. So I recommend it still. It's been an emotional read from, you know, from like an engineering perspective. It's just like, feel the pain of these very, very smart people, you know, with a lot of hubris too, of course, but you know.
Got it. Well, I'm almost coming to the end of a book that I've been struggling to read for ages because it's not that great.
That's tough. When you just want to get out of the way and finish it and
I just want to get it out of the way and finish it, but it's just it was not as fun as the first one because it's a sequel to Ready Player One. So this is, of course,
Ready Player Two. Yeah, I didn't like it.
So you've read it. You know what I'm talking about. It's like, it's a tough, it's like, you know. But anyway, the premise, spoiler alert, to those, so tune out now if you don't want to know the, you know, the plot to Ready Player Two, which they will not turn into a movie, by the way. I'm absolutely sure of it. It's an interesting premise though. You know how in the first one they, you know, you put on the goggles and you go into the Oasis virtual reality, which I'm sure Mark Zuckerberg's a huge fan of the movie. You can't upsell. Which interestingly, I tweeted out the other day, I wonder how much a metaverse NFT virtual lab is worth. And everyone came up with
the same amount anything else in
answer.
A virtual just the same as a virtual yacht.
Someone paid $650,000 for a virtual yacht.
Not real, Dave. Nothing's real.
Anyway, so I put it out there. How much would you pay for an NFT virtual lab, like the ultimate lab kitted out in the metaverse?
It looks like it looks like from the 1980s, like all of the stuff that it's like the VR simulations from the 80s to me.
Right. I haven't actually seen, like I've seen like still shots of it. I've never put on a VR goggle and gone into the metaverse. Have you?
No, I just seen videos captured.
Ah, right. Yep. Right. Yep. I don't get it. So it's dumb. Anyway.
Anyways, you were about to spoil the book.
So they had the VR headset, right? You had to put the
lots
headset
of
on.
Heads up here, folks. No, lots of heads up. You can really eject now. Yep. We will talk about electronics, I promise.
Yep. So Ready Player Two is, you know, a continuation of the first one. And so instead of the VR, he was secretly working on, which nobody knew about, is secretly working on an implant for your brain. You know, it went straight into your cortex. You can bypass the VR. You know, you don't need the headset anymore.
Right, and that's where Elon started reading. That's where Elon
started reading. And how, like, the experience is actually real. And then they record people with these implants doing real things, like surfing or, you know, the most popular
taking
one
drugs,
is,
having
well,
sex,
taking drugs, having sex, and doing whatever, right? So they record all these people doing this, and you can get that actual real experience. It's like the Mars thing. It's like, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mars movie, which I always forget the name of.
Total Recall.
Total Recall, yeah. Recall. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's like the Total Recall
that
thing.
Entire movie is summed up for me with Arnold pulling a ping pong ball out of his nose. That's really
the entirety
of that movie to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
just
all you got out of that.
It's my favorite part. And it shows the range of Arnold's acting.
Yeah, right. Anyway, fantastic movie. Yeah, Total Recall, love it. Anyway, yeah, so that's the premise of this thing, that they've got this artificial implant thing. And yeah, everyone's, you know, once they overcome the fear of putting implant in their head, they realize, whoa, this is, but you can only turn it on for X amount of hours per day. Otherwise, it lobotomizes you or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It does something. But yeah, it's very interesting. So the premise of the book's really good. But oh, God. Yeah, you've read it, right? And it's just,
yes, I was not a fan of the execution. It was
no, but yeah. You like the first book same as I did, right?
I mean, the first book is just like a nostalgia bomb, right? That's what they tried to do in the second book as
second one. But it was on steroids, you know, and it was just, oh God, no. Yep. Yeah. So I'm struggling through that, but anyway, I think it's an interesting look at future tech.
So you just mean like the brain to electronic interface in general,
their brain to electronic interface and how,
I think. As a sci-fi concept, I think, you know, that's the Matrix.
Oh, that's the ultimate thing, isn't it? Yep. And, of course, Elon's famously working on it, although he just changed his name to Elona, but I think he's changed it back now. But
I can't handle that guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The thing I don't understand about all these things, right? So, like, you know, premises like that and really any, like, the BCI things that are out there, like the brain computer interface, whatever. Yep. Yeah, there's like an open BCI project as well. I don't understand how, you know, they always do it at kind of these mass levels, right? They're measuring voltage variations on, you know, the actual cranium and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's not going to do the business. No.
Right, exactly. Like, you think about how a neuron actually fires and makes connections.
There's no way it doesn't seem
like you'd be able to instrument all the way down to individual neurons. You'd have to, I don't know, like, you can maybe measure, but it's all electrochemical as well, right? You can't individually and knowingly squirt out little bits of norepinephrine and whatever the norepinephrine
blocking
all the different reuptakes. You know, they do this in bulk normally. Like if you take like an SSRI, SSNI, the different antidepressant medications that's out there, that's just flooding your entire brain with these things. It's not like targeted strikes to each neuron.
No, and it's
same thing for like monitoring on each neuron.
Yeah. I'm stunned that they can do what they do already. Like, you know, they can put this cap on your head with, you know, like 100 sensors and then you can actually play Pong. You know, you can play the game of, you know, you can actually control paddles and stuff, kind of, you know, you've got to train your brain to think of it, I think. Yeah. But yeah, I'm surprised that they could actually do that through the skull. But I can't see that expanding into greater scope. I think that's probably the limit of, like, you know, skin resistance, like through the skull kind of thing. Like you'd have to.
Yeah, I think definitely at that skull versus.
I don't know at what point you would have to tap in, but geez.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even if you had like a true implant, like, you know, metal going through to the actual brain tissue and stuff like that, it's still like the interface just doesn't. I'm sure there's smart people working on this stuff.
I'm sure.
Intuitively, it does not make sense to me now.
No, same here.
Okay, because people are actually trying it.
Yep. Okay, so we're both on the same wavelength. they're
Dave, it's like we're connected, man. Brain to brain.
Brain bugs. Brain. If you've seen. Yeah.
I have not. No.
Sorry. Brain bugs.
Is that like a...
The movie. Once again, I am useless at recalling movie names, but I can recall every single detail and line. Brain bugs.
That's cool. Brain bugs doesn't sound that good, to be honest. So we can just leave it at brain bugs.
No, Starship Troopers. Starship Troopers, the giant brain bug.
Oh, with Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris. Yes. Yeah, the giant brain bug. Yeah, there's this one big brain bug that he's, you know, and then he just uses the hand telepathy thing to, you know, to actually communicate with the brain bug. And anyway. Great. Another excellent movie recommendation, Starship.
Terrible movie, but fun to watch.
Oh, come on. It was terrible,
Dave. Come on.
You've got to know.
It was so campy on purpose. It was on purpose.
Yeah, no. It's very, but it's a very, if you go into the meaning behind it, it's actually, there's a lot of, you know, there's actually a lot of meaning behind it. It's not just a silly, I have not read the book, but I've heard that the book is excellent. So, and it's a commentary on society and all sorts of stuff, you know. So, yeah, very cool. Anyway, so, okay, so we're both on the same opinion that it's just, I think that we're probably reached the limit, almost reaching the asymptotian towards the limits of what we can do. Like, I think.
Well,
it's
I have no doubt that they'll make further advances there. I just, I don't understand the control mechanism of, like, so now you're, you know, and like, there's other things that are out there where you can, so like, what's that thing that Ben Krasnow used to work on? The it was like a big magnetic core where you're basically doing magnetic pulses into different regions of the brain to actually impact things. And again, that's like hitting the side of a car with a hammer, basically.
Right, you can do it
more and more targeted, of course.
Yep.
But like the stuff that Ben was showing was like basically a huge electric impulse through a coil, which created a magnetic field that he targeted at his motor cortex, and it made his arm twitch. And like, that was, you know, obviously that was his DIY version of this professional thing he was working on. But like, even then, you know, you're okay. You're selectively,
you can target
pulses.
Because you can focus. Would you be able to focus electromagnetic pulses into a like a tiny volume?
Maybe, yeah. I mean,
into
I'm
like
sure
a
you
single
could get
spot,
increasingly small, areas that you're you're probing and maybe influencing. But again, it just feels like, you know, you'd have like this kind of reactive behavior. You're not like, you're not speaking their language, basically. You know, you almost need to, you need to speak the neuron's language,
right?
So I don't know. I still am very. I mean, I would, if people are in this space, like the biological to electrical connection type of thing, I think it's really interesting. I think it's actually more interesting for the biological realm, like basically like growing circuits using biological material is probably more interesting to me than the other way around. And that might be a way that you could, you know, potentially interface later. But I think there has to be some kind of interface layer that is
There's got to, that's the thing
that
they
we don't know
cracked
about,
yet. Yeah, no, I don't think they've cracked that.
I mean, maybe they have in research, but I have not heard about it in the popular media, you know.
No.
That's the only time it's going to bubble up to the surface that we understand it. So.
Well, every time I hear about Elon Musk's Neuralink company,
me too.
Well, the only thing I hear about is that it's massively overhyped. Everyone's leaving. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's nah. That is the official Australian.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Neuralink. Yeah, apparently it's like petering out into, like, they're doing cool things. I don't want to take that away. Like, you know, they're doing very cool stuff, and I'm sure they've got very cool tech, but it's nowhere near, you know, close to what they hoped, apparently. So, anyway.
That's too bad.
No, I'm sure, it'd be great to have a neural, I don't know, what is there an official term for a...
Well, they called it Neuralink, but I just think, you know, brain to computer interface, right?
Yep. Sure, there's someone. Yeah, we'll have to get someone on. That'd be great.
Yeah, if there are. We did find a power person. He'll be on next week. So
fantastic.
A grid person, grid specialist type person.
Fantastic.
Yep. Our audience is broad and knowledgeable and generous. So if you are one of these people who knows about biological stuff, please write in, because our feedback at theamphour.com, it works.
Well, they're furiously going in the comments right now. You do realize that because we're just... couple of dummies
because of all the stuff we're
Jack,
wrong about.
Right?
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt.
Yep, totally. Mm. Yeah. All right. Anyway, that's enough of the neural thing. I want to know how the James Webb Space Telescope. Have you seen the new image that they just got of the focus star?
I saw you tweet about it. No.
It's magnificent.
What was it?
It's the star that they focused on that they were doing their mirror alignment phase thingy majig with. And the first image they took, it had like, you know, 16 different stars because all the mirrors weren't actually lined up, right? They weren't all focused, right? They weren't focused on one point. Yeah. So they pointed it at one star in the middle of nowhere, and they should have seen one star, but they didn't. They saw, you know, 16 different stars, which they totally expected because the mirrors weren't actually focused yet. So they have to micro align to nanometer accuracy. I don't know if it's one, like, I think it's, don't know if it's tens or hundreds of nanometers, I'm not sure, but, you know, it's in the realm of, you know, something like that. So they have to, so they have micro positioners on each of these mirrors, and now they've mm-hmm. actually done their first stage, only the first stage of their alignment process of all, I think it's 16 mirrors, is it? Can't remember exactly how many, but something like that.
That sounds right. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Yep. I know the beryllium. And, that's what I remember. Yeah. Very flat and beryllium.
And then gold. Yeah. And then gold sputtered, I think, surface. And they micro position these, and they just got their first image back. And the star, they've all aligned perfectly. They get this one bright star in the middle, and then all of these galaxies in the background just pop out.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, galaxies we've never seen before. For, you know, billions of years old, because it took the light billions of years to get here. Anyway, fantastic. So these micro positioners. So we're going to link in a video from Breaking Taps. I don't know Breaking Taps channel. But he 3D printed a replica, like a miniature scale replica, of the nanometer accuracy micro positioning thing of how it works. It's
reverse engineered from the paper.
Reverse engineered
from the paper.
And even
better, I don't know if you saw this, the author of the paper shows up in the comments.
Oh, does he? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There he is. It's the,
like,
first comment.
Ta-da, internet.
I wanted to say how impressed I am with your reverse engineering. Your graphics and description are very well done. Yeah. Back then, we didn't have easy access to 3D printers.
Yeah, but so they did it with Legos.
The first model
they did it with Legos.
Oh, that's great.
Fantastic.
Oh, that is gold. Anyway, I was surprised at the almost simplistic crudism. Is that a word? Crudeness?
It's not a word. No.
Crudeness is a word. Of how they do this. It's like,
yeah, like, I think it'd be like lasers and, like, you know,
no,
like tiny balloons and whatever.
That's what
it's
I thought.
Like,
it was,
no, man, this is going to space.
Like I just assumed it was like micro piezo transducer positioning or something, right? No, it's a freaking stepper motor that just pulls via a couple of cogs that then pulls on these center arms, but those center arms go out to other arms that go up, which hold the plate in front. So you're basically moving the posts that are holding up the mirror. So if you micro move those.
Yeah, I think it's like you're putting them under tension, right?
Tension. It's a tension.
Translating to smaller and smaller dimensions based
smaller on tensions.
Tension.
So, they're just using these bloody large stepper motors to micro position the mirror with nanometer accuracy. Because as you said, it was made out of beryllium, right?
Beryllium is the coating, and that's the gold.
I thought that was the material it was made out of. And then it was gold sputtered because it has the greatest strength flexibility thing, because they do actually physically warp these mirrors. Hmm. And I think, anyway, don't quote me on that.
Okay, there are 18 hexagonal mirrors.
Yep.
We're on the internet as we speak, so we can we can do that.
Live
there are seven
check.
Small motors fixed behind each of the each of these. Their purpose is to move and reshape the curvature.
Yep.
Blah 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 blah. Come on.
So they don't just like move them around. They physically change the curvature of it.
Yeah.
They physically change the curve. It's just remarkable to nanometer precision using these bloody stepper motors, and they just pull on these arms. So they just pull the tension on these arms, which then slightly distorts the center point of the mirror and the ring of the mirror, and you can make put it into any shape.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I think, like, I'm stunned it was that simple. I just assumed it was, like, just crazy complicated, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not. Unbelievable.
Well, I mean, it was tested and simulated and then tested.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, it's nuts.
Nothing about this is trivial.
No. And you said how many motors?
Seven per mirror, it said, yeah.
Seven per mirror.
And you were right. It was gold over beryllium. So.
Gold over beryllium.
I'll link in all the stuff that we've been looking up live because I didn't know any better.
Yep. So they had to make it out of beryllium because that gave the greatest, like, it warped properly when you put tension on it. Like, you know.
Right. Yeah. And they said it's also non-magnetic and it's light and strong and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. It's just, this whole project's just a mind blow. Yes. It really is.
$10 billion worth, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's just nuts. And it looks like it's all working. It's just incredible.
Wow. Yeah. So, interesting. kind of lines up with this, but sometimes I run out of things to keep my daughter entertained.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes we there's this app from Kyrgyzstan, the YouTube channel. It's called Universe.
Sagan is just got hooked on that.
The channel or the app?
The channel. I didn't know there was an app.
Oh, the channel is fantastic. Yeah. So if people haven't heard of this channel.
Yeah, because if you haven't seen his channels, he does like a science what if, like these silly, like what happens if you exploded all the nuclear weapons at once, or what happens if the moon crashed into the earth, and you know, and he animates them with these little cute little bird kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah, cute little colorful bird. He spends up to 2,000 hours per video.
Yeah. And you can like sponsor and get one of your birds. You can get like a special bird that's in the background.
Okay. Cool.
There's a gift you can get your kids.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But they also had a drive where they have an app for the universe, right? And so really cool. Just, you know, scale of the universe. So like all the way down to a Planck length, all the way up to the observable universe. And so hang out with my daughter and we're going through this and just kind of showing her different things. And I started having a panic attack. I'm just like, you know, like looking at this app and just like thinking about the scale. It was like one thing, I'll pull it up here just so I have the name of it here. But there's some
old feature. Is she now? I mean, you know, like,
oh, she's not even one yet.
It's not like
she had no idea what was going on. It was just pretty
colorful bird.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the reason I was just trying to, you know, keep her entertained and you know, whatever. But you know, you zoom all the way out.
I think it was more for your entertainment, Chris, than
no. It was just, you know, pretty colors for her.
But there is
a feature of the universe called Virgo A. Have you ever heard of Virgo A before?
I've heard of it, but I've never,
Virgo A, also called M87, has everything a self-respecting galaxy needs. Yes. A couple trillion stars, a supermassive black hole, and a few thousand globular star clusters. Our own Milky Way, with its few billion stars, looks quaint in comparison. Yeah. And that one just started having me like panic breathing, just thinking about like the scale difference. This is just like one dot. You know, this is what they're going to point James Webb at. And they're going to find more and more resolution in this thing. But right now, it's so bright that they just, you know, it's just a dot, right? It's just, it's 980,000 light years away. And it's massive. And I just, my brain just melted in that moment, you know, just reading these things. So anyways, the app is fantastic.
For those who don't know, M87 is like the astrophotographer's staple, right? If you get into photography, if you get into your, you know, astronomy and stuff, that's the one that you photograph. You know, it's the one.
Okay.
Yep. It's the industry standard.
Virgo A or M87. Yeah. Okay.
I haven't really heard anyone really call it. Not many people call it Virgo A, but you know, maybe that's the bigger area, but the M87 galaxy, that's the one. So if you shoot, you know, if you just look up M87, you know, do it yourself photos or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's what everyone does.
Well, after that, I was inspired. I was telling some of my friends, I was saying, I'm going to write a children's book called The Universe. None of this matters. We live in a big black void. What do you think? Is that a good children's book? Maybe don't quit my day job, you said?
No. I'm sure it's already been done.
Oh.
You know, I'm sure someone's done it.
Yeah. Depressing children's book.
Yeah. Nihilist. Yeah. Yep. Just no. It's all depressing. Yep.
It's all I think it's great. I love that kind of stuff. I mean, like once I get over the, you know, the breathing part of it, and I actually kind of regain composure.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Like, you know what? That deadline I'm worried about, not that big a deal. Come on.
Yep. Nah, exactly. I was supposed to send Dave something.
What's the big deal?
That's all very Carl Sagan, you know.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. There we are, suspended in a we're just a mote of dust, you know, suspended in a moonbeam.
Totally.
Nothing matters. The amp hour doesn't matter.
Yeah,
we just may not do it next week. We're just just
25 minutes in. I think people listening are like, yeah, we know.
Anyway, fantastic. James Webb Space Tour. I'm like obsessed with the following that.
Yeah, it's just more and more content keeps coming out, and I couldn't be happier about it.
Yep. And they've got another month of alignment left or so, another couple of months worth of alignment left. They haven't even, the calibrations and alignment. I guess they couldn't send it up calibrated, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like... they calibrated it, but well, we're going to do it again because it was on a big shaky candlestick.
Shaky rocket thing. And yep. Yeah. And these panels that fold out, and they might not fold out all the way, you know,
right.
Yeah, yeah. It's just it's nuts. Absolutely nuts. And it all worked. Holy crap.
Yep.
Can't believe it.
Speaking of things that are nuts, obviously there's two very big things in the news that nobody is surprised by right now. One is obviously the conflict in Ukraine. That's a big one that is impacting lots of things. You know, that's impacting things in the supply chain around like neon and I don't know, stuff like that. Doesn't, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
I think
that's yeah.
More specific to the, and I, you know, we can come back to that too, but like more specific to the supply chain is that, yeah, China, the Shenzhen's shut down right now.
Yeah, kind of a problem. So is it, yeah. I haven't checked the latest news because I think it's only happened in the last 24 hours that it got bad or something. I've just woken up.
So they basically said a week.
It's been getting a bit bad over days.
This happened about 4 days ago.
Really? But I thought they were still shipping. Like, I thought they were in lockdown, but I didn't know that. And have they stopped shipping stuff? Is it?
Well, I've had some orders canceled. I don't know about you.
Oh, okay. Right. No, I don't have any orders going at the moment. So
yeah,
okay.
I mean, nobody's allowed to like go to work and stuff like that.
Right.
And
okay.
I think a lot of the port stuff is, yeah. So,
yep.
Yeah. It's,
yeah. And Shenzhen, like everything comes from Shenzhen. Like, well, not yep. Does anyone know what, is there like a pie chart of what percentage of, you know, components and stuff actually comes from Shenzhen versus, you know? It's huge.
It's probably like a Pareto principle, 80%, you know?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, really.
No,
yeah,
I don't think
it's
actually
rubber.
That much.
Eh, well,
I think
you know
it's also, I think, hard to like to separate that stuff out. You think about like all the assemblies that happen. So like if you, I don't know, well, iPhone's a bad example, but if you open up a piece of consumer electronics, probably a lot of that. But if you open up a piece of industrial electronics, you know, maybe the circuit boards are from there, but then locally the, you know, the metal stuff is not, you know, like if it's just electronics, then yeah, maybe a large percentage, but
dude, it's worse. It's worse. 90% apparently.
90%.
That's it. I'm reading a Forbes article. 90% of the world's electronics comes from Shenzhen. That seems too high.
You think? Yeah. You mean like, too high as an estimate or too high as in a principled way?
No. It said like just I don't believe it's that high. It can't be. Like there's got to be like more. Yeah, but no, it's reported.
I mean, is the assembly stuff there? I mean, like, do you count the silicon that was manufactured, you know, somewhere else, South Korea or Taiwan or?
Well, most of the world's high-end silicon is Taiwan.
Sure.
The majority is, it's not actually done in China. It's most of the real high-end, like I'm talking real, the high-end silicon's all your Intel processors
TSMC,
and stuff like that.
Right? I mean,
TSMC.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but I'm seeing like it's 90% is just popped up from all these articles. Maybe somebody made it and then everyone else just copied it. But that seems ridiculously high.
Yeah, that is.
Both in principle and in practice. Yeah, like it should not be that high if it is. Like, let's just go there, which is why.
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't know how we get back from there. Yeah.
Well, Intel's just announced $33 billion in R&D in the EU. R&D, though, what does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. That's not going to, none of this, none of the stuff that we've, so like there's stuff on the move, right? We talked about 2 weeks ago. Yep. They're starting to build other stuff. I think, you know, but I think it's.
Everyone's had a giant wake-up call. Yep.
First off, it's going to be 5 years, right? It's going to be five years before this stuff comes online.
At least.
Like packaging still goes to Malaysia and Vietnam, so you still have like inner.
Oh yeah,
you know
this is one.
You know, like
those
packaging
who don't
is
know,
still not going to happen in the U.S. Right?
This is one
or
of the crazy thing, right?
Asia.
Everyone thinks that oh yeah, everything's just made in one factory, right? Your chip pops out of the one factory. No. It's like these wafers are shipped all around the world to different sites who do different processes on the wafers. You know, wafer might be made and wafers made somewhere else, and then it's shipped to another country, which then does the actual, you know, the photolithography and exposure and actually doing the thing. And then it'll be shipped to another country for packaging and testing. Mm-hmm. And like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of this is just the efficiency of different markets and like what people have on hand and, you know, where the specialization happens. So like,
yeah.
So as an example, right? Like, so granted, all of my examples are from 2006, right? That's when I electronics, the wafer industry and stuff like that. But like the wafers we had, the ingots came from Japan. That's where all the wafer, the silicon wafers were being made, basically.
Yeah.
And there just aren't that many vendors.
And you work for a South Korean company, right? Samsung.
I work for a South Korean company building wafers in a factory in Austin, Texas, right?
Right.
But the Austin, Texas wafers went back to the same place that everywhere did. They didn't go flying back to South Korea. They went to Malaysia and they got packaged up there, right?
They got packaged in Malaysia.
Cut and packaged, and then they got shipped usually to South Korea for testing or to China for testing, right? And so like, you know, you have to track all this stuff all the way back, but like, it's because of all these different specializations. And so I don't see how this stuff gets disentangled, right? Like,
no, it's
not like the US is going to get really good at packaging. Nobody's going to go and invest, you know, like, especially when you think about the economics of like, you'd have to lowball Malaysian prices
for many years to gather some percentage of the
either you have to pay the huge difference in cost to have your own packaging in country, which, you know, you can do, and you can do it for testing, whatever, but at a large scale. So then you're adding that to every single piece price that you have out.
Yep.
And it's just like, I don't get how that changes, you know? I don't know, Dave.
Well, another crisis has to happen in that country, right? So all the crap's going on at the moment, and people have to realize that, you know, China's not the best place.
Yeah, I feel like the most likely, probably, it's still not going to, again, I know my view is very U.S.-centric here, but like just saying U.S.-based packaging, right? Yep. I don't think that would happen unless automation becomes so incredibly cheap.
I'm sending you a link. Sending you multiple links. Just come out. Breaking news. Yeah.
Yeah.
Forbes, straight off the teletype.
January 5th, 2022.
American semiconductor is taking a step towards U.S. domestic chip packaging.
Yeah. I mean, they're saying this, but I don't really believe it. Like, I know they're doing all this stuff, and it's like, it's good that they're doing it, but it's just at the scale that is necessary to like actually de-risk the supply chain like this. It's just I mean, it's good there's investment happening. Don't get me wrong.
Totally. Well, I guess they, you know, everyone, like, there's nothing happening in Malaysia, you know, now, is there? Like, it's like there's nothing politically happening. There's nothing, you know, it's just kind of like, man.
I mean, like, that's,
I don't know.
All of this stuff. Honestly,
it's nuts.
I mean, I'm going to talk about Ukraine a little bit here. Like, obviously, you know, Russia invading Ukraine is a tragedy, and it's shaken up a lot of the world right now. And my heart's breaking over it. But another thing that's been happening alongside that is people being like, oh, they're like looking at China, like, well, you're not going to touch Taiwan, right? You know, like, and I think a lot, you know, I don't think that this, you know, this $50 billion or whatever the US is spending, it's not because we think that, oh, this is some great new investment here. You know, it's because they're worried about China.
It's a strategic thing. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Like, that's the other thing I don't understand is that, so now we have, okay, Intel's doing all this investment and all these announcements that we talk about in here. That's great. I'm very glad that they're doing this. But like, you're not building me a 6-nanometer switching supply. Like, it's just not happening. You're going to build it on a 90-nanometer or 45-nanometer process if it's really, really, really fancy. And unless you start getting that stuff in there too, I don't understand.
Yeah, you know, but like, the US still has tons of those old fabs, don't they?
Not really. I mean, there's a wiki page that we've talked about on here before.
Yeah,
right? I can pull that up.
A list of but I thought
it's just not enough. You know what I mean? And it's not enough for the whole world. That's the real thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're all dealing with this right now. We're all dealing with this crazy ass supply chain, bubblegum tap shoes, and like, I just, you know, it's going to be 3 to 4 years before this even gets back to normal ish. And who knows what happens by then in the world.
People keep asking me, like, when is this supply chain thing going to end? And I go, it's not going to be this year or probably next year. Like,
I'd say 3 years.
Yep. I'd put it at least 3 years out. Yeah. I'd be surprised if it was solved by the end of 2023.
I'd say 3 years until you and I are like, I remember that. Like, it's not that bad anymore. That,
When I was a boy, we had this supply chain
crisis.
It'll get
better-ish. But it's not going to be good. It's not going to be like, oh, man, chips are so cheap. Cheapest chips.
Yep. Oh, boy. Yep.
I wish it was, but
it's not. Just nuts. Anyway. Well, another thing which you put on here, life as, and there's, I think I know where you're going with this because you haven't told me, but life as a trucker.
Yeah. This was about...
You put this on it. Okay, explain. There's an article in the New York Times.
Yeah, so this was about a lot of the truck protests. You know, obviously we're getting a lot of news.
Yeah, the truck protests and everything.
Here.
But life as a trucker. But I'm sure you have... But this does tie in, right?
So the thing that was interesting to me about this is there's a comment I put on here was basically, you know, so this was kind of like explaining a socioeconomic thing around it. You know, like, I don't agree with the vaccine hesitancy at all, but fine, there's socioeconomic stuff around it. And like one of the things is... that this is an industry that is incredibly squeezed, right? Everybody's, you know, like it's just a, there's no regulation around it, but there is regulation on the safety side, but not on the wages side. And so a lot of the monitoring that happens is basically to, what did it say? The monitoring and the technology isn't for replacing workers. It's been brought in to manage declining working conditions. And so what I thought that was interesting in for our show is, you know, that is something that, so this is a socioeconomic event that's happening and they're trying to explain it away, but this is technology that's actually enabling safety. You know, it's being said in one hand, it's safety, but on the other, it's actually enabling bad working conditions because they're just keeping people on the edge of what they can work in.
So what technology are we talking about here? Like cameras that monitor that whether or not they're like dozing off at the wheel or...
That's right. Sensors, if they're looking at their phone to change a podcast is one example they give. And it's just like,
geez, imagine how many podcasts you could, that'd be your dream job, Chris, wouldn't it? Would be to just be
No, I hate road trips actually. It would not be for me.
Really?
Yeah. I would not do well.
We've been on a road trip. Two of us have been on a road trip.
I mean, I enjoy that as a novel thing, but no, I don't like.
No, I love road trips. Oh God, I could just go on a road trip all day.
King of the road.
I'm more interested. See, where I thought you were going with this was that how underappreciated, this is where my interest is, underappreciated transport is. People don't realize that trucks are the bedrock of everything in your life. You would be without absolutely everything if it wasn't for trucks.
Yeah.
You would not survive another day if it wasn't for trucks.
I think that is definitely a piece of this as well. Is that like
incredible.
Kind of a, you don't know how the stuff's getting to you or your stores, whatever, but without that. And I think that's where a lot of the pricing pressure comes from. So like if now you have people that are driving trucks and if they're getting pressure from their bosses to drive more and more and more, and they're saying, well, and we're also going to monitor you. Yep. And they start quitting like crazy. You know, it's just like this very difficult situation, I think, for the workers. So I think that's what they were talking about in the socioeconomic.
Haven't they had to pay a lot more for truck drivers recently somewhere? It may not have been in the US, but it was some country. Was it Canada or somewhere else? They had to, like, they were begging people to become truck drivers and we'll pay you, you know, an absolute buttload.
Yeah, I think I think that's, some of it. Yeah.
Anyway,
I think there's price pressures in a lot of hiring industries right now.
Yeah.
Upward pressures.
But trust me, everything in your country stops if the trucks stop. People don't realize these things just go magically through the night. You know, you don't see many of them during the day, but you know, they're just like, this is what gets everything around.
Every time I use a courier service like UPS or FedEx, I'm just like, oh yeah, I sent that yesterday. That's in Florida. That's halfway across the country now. It's up in Wisconsin. How the hell did it get there? You know, like there's just infrastructure built on infrastructure, built on trucks, you know, like, it's just like,
exactly. Trucks and in case of planes, if you're going, you know, in the state and stuff, it's nuts. People don't realize the complexities of the logistical hubs and the infrastructure.
I think that's, you know, like, so I think again what I was interested in is that, like, it kind of, what this article did for me is it made me think about the other side of this, right? So the reason these trucks are so instrumented is one for safety, which I think everyone agrees with, right? And then another is just for efficiencies. And for, you know, so that I can get my package somewhere in 2 days at, you know, the lowest possible price or whatever. That's the nice side of things. And, you know, and so that these businesses can operate, you know, a profitable business while still dealing with all the human issues that happen. Yep. But like there are people in the system, right? There are meat controllers in the system
there
you know, that have to deal with the working conditions.
What's your prediction? Because I'm famously anti-autonomous driving. Like, not anti, but I'm saying it's not going to happen anytime soon. I've been saying it for a decade and I've been right. Mm. Right? We're still not close. We're still not even close.
Yeah, like you're
even
like
Elon Musk admits he admits that we're not even close. We need, his own words, we need a gigantic leap in artificial intelligence before it's going to be really viable. Yet he still will happily sell you it for $10,000, you know, and claim it's full self-driving. Anyway, but trucks is the obvious one, right?
I think so. Yeah, especially trucks, like you said, the drive at night.
But,
you know, it's just
I think that, you know, I think the same thing applies. The technology is still not there. You can do it on the highways, and highways are great, right? So you can potentially, even now, I think we could probably have the driver like sleeping in the cab in the back as the truck hurtles down the highway, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's possible. But I think you still need that human in there to take over the last mile, as they call it.
I think that's right.
Right? Yeah, you know, to actually navigate into the, you know, through the city streets
into
into the depot and offload it. Yeah. And then they've got if you're a tanker, you know, if you've been to a gas station in the US, you know, the tanker truck pulls up, it's the guy driving the tanker truck that then hooks up all the hoses and puts all the, you know, the gas into the ground and stuff like, you know, he's the one who operates everything. Yeah. So he's not only the truck driver, he's the, you know, guy who offloads the, you know, the fuel and everything, right? So, like you still need like humans to do all that. I know that if you're talking about goods, then you go into the depot and then there's guys that come up in the little truck, the forklift truck, that then take the pallets off the truck and stuff like that. But, you know, I still think you need a human for the last mile. Would you agree?
I think so right now. Yeah. I mean, I think that ultimately that's what's holding up a lot of the stuff with, you know, self-driving modes on various cars anyways, right? It's just,
right.
You don't know when a dog's going to dart out into the road. You have to make decisions, snap decisions based on that, you know? And I don't know.
There's so many variables involved. Once you get off the highway, it's just nuts.
Yeah. I think we're going to see increasing, and like they kind of talk about in this article too, they say like, it's already started getting there, right? We're instrumenting things and we're maybe even having machines step in and take action. I think there's just more and more of that that's going to happen over time. It's going to be kind of more assistive rather than complete takeover.
Yes, it's going to be assistive, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's possible by the end of this decade, I think it's possible that we might be starting to have trucks that are hands-off for the entire highway stretch.
Yeah, it could be,
In certain locations, though, they would have to be approved routes, right? So, or routes.
Yeah, maybe like only 3-lane highways where they can get all the way to the right or something.
Exactly.
Like that,
you know, and then once you and then have the truck automatically pull off into this truck stop at the, and then an alarm goes off and it wakes the driver up and then he drives the rest of the way in, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think one of the problems, like, again, just to bring it back to the human issue here though, is that like over time, so you have more and more machine taking control, so it becomes a less and less specialized skill, which means there's more and more downward pressure on wages with it.
Again, you know, like,
it is what it is there.
No, well, but actually, the specialized skill comes in navigating a truck through suburbia and everything else. I think that's your specialized skill. Yeah, like, I'd say any monkey could drive a truck down the highway, maybe, but I think it's a pretty specialized skill to navigate and back up a truck in like complex, you know, suburbia and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm just saying that if you, you know, continue to put guardrails and things around the skill, right, as I think society wants us to, right? I think that's, you know, just thinking about it as people doing technology, right? We, you know, you and I are not the ones doing it, but I'm sure some of our listeners are in this field being asked to do this sort of thing. So there's more and more guardrails around behavior in this arguably very, very dangerous space. I think then that is a net positive, but the net negative is that the people then that are left in that space are more and more fungible, right? They can be switched out with one another, right? There's no number one trucker. It's just, you know, you pass some threshold and you're saying like, oh yeah, you're good enough because the computer is going to take the rest of it. I feel like there are going to be more and more technological issues in this space, and not just trucking, of course. You know, you think about like areas where AI is coming in or other, you know, maintenance of a plant, right? So, you know, if say you have like smart maintenance on all your machines, well, you don't need Rusty, the number one mechanic,
right,
who happened to know when a thing was needed to be maintenanced. It's just, you know, just Bob that's just watching the meters. And then when something does happen,
right,
it's terrible. So like that, you know, that, I don't think I'm making my point very well here, but I think that the technological impact, this is an unintended technological impact. And that's what struck me about this article, is kind of the human pieces of it that I didn't understand.
Got it.
So as technologists, something to think about. I don't think it's going to stop, you know, it's not, this is what's driving our industry as people making electronics, but there are impacts that I had not thought about.
All right. What else we got?
Well, speaking of,
you've got another happy hour, but we'll save that for the end. Yeah.
Oh yeah. We should definitely mention that. You have been not dealing with trucks, but with paper lately.
Paper?
DRM paper?
Sorry?
DRM paper? Isn't that the...
bloody DRM paper. Oh, God. Yeah.
I think it's been since the last time we had a show.
If you said labels instead of paper, I would have known exactly what you were talking
DRM
about.
DRM labels or paper. Yeah.
DRM labels. Yeah, the bastards. They're trying to kickstart DRM, digital rights management, in the label industry. They're the first ones to do it, I do believe. And they've been hit with a massive backlash. I mean, it isn't just me, you know, it's like tons of, it's gone mainstream. And they're getting a huge backlash. And coincidentally, Dymo, who did this, are currently looking for a new head of Dymo, a new head manager to run Dymo. So I don't know whether that has any, they saw the writing on the wall, but I've been contacted by people who share on that remain anonymous going, yeah, everyone in Dymo is not happy with this. They're leaving. Yep. The writing's been on the wall for a while.
And do you know how much it costs to print that on the wall? Because, you know, DRM wall.
Well, I know it costs 17 cents per label. That's how much it costs.
Oh my gosh, seriously? Wow.
Yeah, 17 cents per label. Unbelievable. So anyway, if for those who don't know, I did a video where the new 505 XL series printers have an RFID chip embedded in the label roll. So it's in the core, you know how they got like a cardboard core and then the labels on the outside. They embed an RFID chip in there, which is a secure RFID chip, and they write to it. So every time you print a label, it's got a counter in it. And every time you print a label, it has the number of, you know, say it's got, you know, 500 labels on there. It counts down. And once that reaches zero, you can't reuse that reel. It's got, and you've got to buy genuine, and it won't use third party reels either. Whereas, you know, Dymo, like you used to be able to buy your Dymo ones, you know, from any third party manufacturer.
Yeah.
They make a whole range of different labels, and you get them for like, you know, under a cent per label. But now they're forcing you to pay 17 cents per label to get the bloody official Dymo ones. Otherwise it simply doesn't work. And it's pissed everyone off. Yep. Not good. And I busted them. I did a second follow-up video where they were reusing their Amazon listings of their old printers, where they had thousands of positive reviews because their old printers were great, right? Didn't have any of this DRM rubbish. And, you know, the old Dymo label printers are great. You know, the 450 Turbo, the 4XL, you know, basically anyone's got a Dymo label has a Dymo 450 Turbo, right? It's got thousands of positive reviews. You reuse the same listing, change the photos and the title to be their new 550 printer with DRM so that they could reuse the old positive ratings, right? That's as low as it gets. I mean, that's like shady third-party dodgy Amazon seller trick, right? Unbelievable. This is Dymo doing it. Unbelievable.
Crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot. It has been actually last night. It was, I believe, it's been successfully hacked. Somebody on the forum has done it. But no, I don't think that's good. No, I don't want it hacked. I do not want it hacked. I want people to boycott them. I want them to send them back and simply, no, I'm not, you know, never use a Dymo again.
Yeah.
So simple as that. Or buy a secondhand, you know, if you've got, buy an old stock. You know, buy old stock now while you can, and you can continue to use it for the next 5 or 10 years, you know?
Yep, totally.
Madness. Anyway, bastards. So yeah, I want them to go out of business. I want, you know, you've got to stop this. Otherwise, if the other manufacturers see that they get away with this and, oh, okay, somebody hacked it, so what? You know, most people will buy the DRM. Then the other manufacturers will start doing it. Zebra will start doing it. Brother will start doing it, right? And then it snowballs, just like the bloody toner and ink cartridge thing, right? Yeah. So, yep. Your thoughts?
I have a really old label printer, so I'm cool.
Right. No, but I think, I mean, a big deal for anyone who does packing and shipping, you know.
Yeah, totally. So, you know. Yeah, I think, and especially at the software layer too, when you like all of your
software is built around a printer. Yeah,
all of your integrations are going to be working with these big vendors because they're going to pay. Yep. Exactly. You know, they're going to have money to support the software builds and whatever. So yeah.
Yep.
It sucks.
Anyway. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I think they should be boycotted and not hacked.
Yeah.
Although I'm not going to. You know, I won't actually poo-poo a hack, but I'm saying no. Don't
sure,
don't buy the new printers. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. They must be sent a message. Yep. And I don't know, is that happening in any other industry? Like, you know, like manufacturers trying to sneak in, trying to lock you in? Are there any other?
Coffee makers were doing that for the Keurigs. Were doing that for a while.
Juicing machines, Juicero.
Juicing machines, yeah, yeah.
Yep. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah. Got to stop it.
Speaking of sending messages, our friends over at the unnamed Reverse Engineering Podcast were doing an interview with Oleg Kutkov.
Well done.
Who was actually live in Kyiv and had explosions in the background during the recording. So,
oh, wow.
You can't hear him, but he's like, yeah. No, the air silencers are going off, rather. Right. But they're doing Starlink reverse engineering. So in Kyiv, they're actually getting like huge download speeds from Star. Oh, man, friggin' Elon again. But, you know, in a very positive way here. and so that's Alvaro and Jen's podcast, the unnamed reverse engineering show. We've done joint shows with them. They're talking to Oleg, though. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was talk that they could actually target them. That because if you like in theory, the enemy could target those because you can, you know, they're actually transmitting, right? So it's like it's possible to get a fix on the location of these Starlink devices. And I think Elon himself actually tweeted this that they have to be careful or something because they could actually technically, in theory, be tracked to their actual location. So, you know, you got to be careful. So, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole complicated mess over there.
Yeah. It's a very messy, all of it. It's terrible.
Well, there's more reverse engineering, which got the most thumbs up on the Reddit almost. The Tesla Model 3 key fob. Somebody reverse engineered.
Yeah, this is the first time this person has reverse engineered this, but they dumped they dumped the firmware off of the, it was a CC2650, I think.
Yep.
I lost my link here.
Yes, I think the CC13XX and 26XX.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've used the 2642 before.
Right.
And I think it's like a 8051. Is the core for the micro? I don't remember. It's not. There is a Cortex M3.
CC2640R2F.
Yeah.
And there's a gorgeous shot of a of inside the key fob with all the breakout wires coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Yep. Yep. Yeah. They went to a fair bit of effort to do that. Nice. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm seeing. Yeah. It's not much in the key fob. So what? Why are they reverse engineering the key fob to what end? Just because they can, or what's the use case?
I think it's, you know, to find security vulnerabilities, you know.
Oh, right. Okay. Open Teslas anywhere, right? Is that the...
Yeah, I don't think it's like from a... I think this is like a research project, right? I don't think this is going to be like this person's going to go and steal Teslas.
Oh, no, I'm not. But they might go around for fun and just open up all the Teslas or start them or something.
Yeah, I'm sure that's part of it.
Can't you, with the key fob, can't you do the summon thing? Can't you, is there a summon? I don't know how the summon thing, or is that through an app?
That's from an app.
That's an app, is it? Okay, right.
Leonard, the person doing this, is a researcher, but using Chip Whisper. So we've had Colin on the show a couple times. This is doing side channel and glitching and able to think dump firmware then, reverse engineer it using Ghidra. I think I'm saying that right. I never know.
So Ghidra. Many acronyms. Too many acronyms.
No, Ghidra is like the, that's the...
It isn't an acronym?
No, it's like a name of a serpent or something like that.
Oh,
it's,
okay, right.
It's like a open source version from the NSA for reverse engineering things.
Got it.
You know, I have not heard of Ghidra. Ghirda.
Did we talk about two weeks ago on the show, about going back to work? About
we did. Still...
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we made, okay. No, done.
We made jokes about that.
That right. Damn it. I'm back in the office now working on my own. Yeah. Boy. And you put this on here. What happened during the 2003 blackout? Are you talking about the New York blackout? No, Eastern Canada, US and Canada. Seaboard. Eastern
this
Seaboard.
This was sent to me in response to the stuff talking about. So we'll have someone on, like I said, next week talking about the grid.
Yep.
But this is kind of talking about the various things that happened in the cascading failure that was the 2003 Eastern Seaboard blackout. Which was almost 20 years ago now, which is
That might be my lunchtime video today. This is from Practical Engineering Channel, which is great.
That's right. Practical Engineering does different videos on the grid specifically. So I'm sorry I forget who sent this to me, but it's interesting show, you know, like just kind of talking through the logistics of stepping power on and off. And then how do you do like other videos that the Engineering Channel has in there is like, how do you do that? Right. Obviously, how do you switch in new sources or test that a source has been shut down? And, you know, they're very, very big switches or big relays.
Big ass switches.
But it's interesting too, because, you know, you see these things at switching substations and, you know, I see all these funny shapes, you know.
Weird physical constructions, alien looking.
Isolation and I just never really paid attention.
No.
If I'm being honest.
Same here. I know. We actually visited a substation once when we were studying engineering. Oh, yeah? And visited a substation and was like, you know, they're almost begging us to get into the come and work in the industry because so few people that like actually care about the grid, you know, they're almost begging us. It was kind of funny. But even then my eyes sort of, you know, these big alien looking objects, you know, because I've never been a high voltage guy, right? I've always been like a low voltage logic, you know, current guy. So
I think one thing that's interesting, I mean, like you and I would not be working on projects on our own bench for that, right? So it's like if you were in that field, there's probably some very interesting engineering challenges to solve, but there is almost certainly no chance of, you know, lone wolfing it and building something on your own. And, you know, you've talked about that's how, you know, you kind of always did it because some of it was just not having other people around that were working on this stuff. But like, I think just generally, you know, people listening right now might be at their bench soldering, a personal project, whatever. There aren't really just aren't many personal projects at that scale. You know, you get to do bigger, cooler things maybe at, you know, in the
there's
grand
only
scheme,
a
you know.
Few, but you have to be a very rare breed. You have to be a Andy from photonic induction, right? You've got to be that sort of, you know, level guy. But he works in that industry. So, you've got to, I don't know. Can anyone name like a hobbyist who's just working on huge voltage step up? Yeah, I'm not talking Tesla coil stuff. Like I'm talking, scale. Like you can't.
The scale and the cost, really. Like just to do that same kind of thing. It doesn't scale down to like a hobby level,
it
really. As far as I understand it, you know, maybe you could.
Well, maybe you could set up your own 500 kV transmission line in your paddock or something if you really wanted to. But, you know, to transfer, you know, power from your house to your shed, which is, you know, five Ks away if you're on some gigantic property or something, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's like, I can't say I've ever heard of it.
Yeah, Maybe it exists, but I haven't heard of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Leave it in the comments.
So that is potentially a downside.
And, we're talking grid. You can't connect to the grid, right? You can't integrate. You know, you've got your wires coming into your house. It's not like you can go, you know, to the local paddock and actually climb up there and hook something into the, you know, the 500 kV lines. I mean, it just doesn't work.
I mean, you could do it once.
You could do it well. You could get close once.
Yeah.
It's just something that, it's weird. You have to work in the industry. Otherwise, it's a
right. Well, no-go. Yeah. And I think the other thing too is just the scale of projects. Like you get to do these, you know, big projects. You're probably a smaller part of the overall. That's fine. Yep. You know, that happens even at the scales that we're talking about here. You know, like you and I might work on small microcontrollers that's on our bench, but we're not, you know, shipping a billion units of that thing. You know, nobody's shipping a billion units on their own.
No.
Even if it is a small thing that maybe we could do troubleshooting on a bench.
Mm.
But
that's an interesting question. Can somebody tell us in the comments who is the highest volume individual you know? Who is like, you know, I'm talking one man band from their shop. How many like units are they, you know, selling, shipping? Mm. Who's the biggest shipping one, you know, manufacturing in-house one man band kind of?
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing too with that is like, so if they send out for circuit board assembly, does that disqualify them from being a one band man?
No, not necessarily. I'd say, but if they're doing all the packing and shipping in house, you know, if they're doing like, you know.
You're just putting it at the pieces out the door, huh?
Yep. Okay. Pieces out the door. Yep. We will award bonus points for ones that actually assemble in house as well. Mm. So, yep. And I'm not talking freaking Adafruit, right? I'm talking one man band.
Well, I mean, Adafruit has 100 plus employees. So.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I think the scale, I think it does reach, it becomes asymptotic, right? Of like,
how only many so much
things
you
can you actually assemble in a day or week or month or year and then get out the door.
But anyway, all this power stuff. So next week will be fascinating. But I've always said, like, you know, if you want some niche to get into that's going to be very high paying and not much competition, the power stuff. I think you'll be snapped up, right, somewhere if you're into your.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Really? Why?
I don't think you'll have trouble feeding your family. I don't think you'll be rolling in dough.
Really?
No.
Oh no, you won't be filthy rich, but like, you know, you'll get paid. I reckon you'll get paid a lot more than Joe average engineer just, you know, doing some board layout, right?
Yeah, but
there's less competition. Well, you know? There is less specialists out there that really know about this sort of stuff. So
I guess the maybe one thing in the plus column would be that there is specialized knowledge around it. You probably need some level of certification. Again, we'll ask this stuff next week. But then it is also something that is needed everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? Like every town needs power, right? Yep. So that's tied in. Mm-hmm. But then also that leads me to believe that it can't be that niche by default, right? I mean, like you can't operate the whole country's
grid. No, but I'm talking about, you know, not just some maintenance engineer. I'm talking about like somebody who actually knows the design of the grid and, you know, like can like do new installation design and consulting and stuff like that. I reckon there's like got to be.
I see.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about stringing lines up or something. You know?
Got it. Just stringing up 500,000 volt lines. Yeah.
Like there's a new town going up and you need new infrastructure. So your Joe Blogs power consulting business, right? There's got to be decent money in actually consulting for that sort of stuff if you have the knowledge. Anyway,
maybe you find out next week. We'll see.
Yep. That would make a fascinating tour. If I get my ass back out there, because COVID's over pretty much.
Sure.
So, well, you know, life's getting better. Well, here, you know, and in the US, I'm hearing that people just don't care anymore, right? And it's, you know, here it's like, it's getting back to normal, right?
So I have a meetup. That's how you can tell.
Yes, exactly. You have a physical in-person meetup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I might try and get a tour of a power station. That'd be really cool.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone wrote to me that used to work in a nuclear plant around here, but they don't anymore. But they might be able to introduce me. I don't think I'm going to get invited into a nuclear plant, but I would.
Nuclear plants, I would make lots probably, of Homer Simpson jokes. That'd be interesting, but not as interesting the stuff to look at as you'd get in a substation or something, you know, like a huge power generation. Okay. Yeah, I'm talking, you know, I want to see big alien-looking structures with massive bus bars running, you know, I want to see stuff like that.
You want to feel like the hair on your arm, like,
it's going to light up if I get too close. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whereas
that was the end of Dave, folks. He had a good run, but you know, the universe is big and nothing really matters. So
he really, you know, he tried to get that one shot, you know, he tried to get that good shot. And, you know,
should have brought that long distance lens.
Yeah. But that'd be cool.
So I have a new meetup in Durham. It's going to be Durham, Raleigh, and Chapel Hill, sometimes referred to as the Research Triangle.
You're right.
Yeah. We're going to do it just like we did in Chicago and San Francisco and Seattle.
Is this going to be at a pub or are you going to hire a place?
Yeah, no, this will be a pub. Outdoor pub. That'll be the... Okay. So if you're listening to this and you're in the area, first off, why haven't you contacted me yet? Second off, let your friends know if they happen to be in the area. Love to geek out about some electronics, show off some projects with people.
Cool.
So there will be a link in the show notes.
Excellent. Well, I hope you get a decent turnout.
Even if I don't. If there's like one person there, I'll just nerd out with them.
Well, we have the electronics show that's in April, I think.
You gonna go?
April? Or is it? My God. I'm going to. Yep.
It is almost April, just so you know.
Anyway.
2 weeks away.
Jesus. Yeah. No, it is April. It is April. It is April 5th and 6th. Yeah, that's not far away at all, actually. Jesus, that's March like now, weeks. Right? Yeah, 18th of March. Oh, God. Come on. Really?
3 weeks away. Yeah, it's like 3 weeks away.
Okay, yeah, that's not that far away. Wow, 5th of April. All right. Jeez. Anyway, yeah, I'll be there. I don't know if I'll be there for the 2 days, but I'll be wandering around, I guess.
Cool.
There's a super secret after party, which I've been invited to.
Yeah. Not secret anymore.
Yeah. It's, yeah, if you've ever been to one of the after parties after a trade show, they're not exactly, you know.
no supermodels walking around.
There's no supermodels walking around, no. There's no, you know.
Prince isn't playing a secret show or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. No celebrities wandering around and, you know, getting absolutely hammered. Nah. It's,
right.
Yep. Anyway, cool. But yeah, so that's... So I only get one more shout out for that, I think, before that happens. Jeez. All right.
Yeah. Well, you should set up your own meetup there. Be like, hey, if you're going to be there, meet up at a coffee shop or pub.
Right. I'll see what I can do.
All right.
All right. Cool. Well, that's it. Our amp hour is up. Our capacity's all used up.
Have a good week, folks.
Catch you next time.